God, King. All glories, all glories, and assembly devotees. All glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Ki. So we said before, we go into the new subject matter each day, we would take questions that anyone may have had from the previous day's discussion. So if anyone have any burning question, we'll take a few questions now, and then we'll go into our subject matter, to our homework assignment. I think, Mother, you were having a question. Now, what you'll need to do is when you are responding, raise your hand first until the microphone comes around to you, and then start speaking when the microphone comes. So, Madhava, you hand her the microphone.
Yesterday you say that to go to Krishna Loka we need to be invited by the gopis. My question is, how do we get the mercy to be invited?
Well, we already have that. Yesterday I mentioned that no one really goes back to Krishna's abode without being invited by a gopi or a gopal. If you analyze our great acharyas, we see that that is in fact their category. And that's why they have the special dispensation and the potency to be able to give special knowledge. If you just reflect, you'll see that there are many people who pursue a God-conscious process. But in most cases, they are connected with Dharma. Or they are trying to pursue the Shakti or the energies of Krishna. Not understanding the Shakti Mam, not understanding the Samam Bonam, that there is not only the God, but there is Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so for most people, that's okay. Because the nature of their karma, the nature of their desires, the aggregate of their desires, is not really connected with transcendence. Because it's not connected with transcendence, they do not have the sukriti or jnana sukriti that has connected them with a resident of the spiritual world who then gives them the prasad, the mercy and the blessings and the encouragement that's directly connected with their ability to follow. Yes, everyone has the ability to become pure, because we're all pure ultimately. So it's a matter of uncovering. But it's not that everyone has really the desire in this lifetime to know, to want to know about Krishna in full. So they will not, be facilitated where they can have that kind of knowledge. And those who do, and it means that there's some special desires that have unfolded. And the Lord who's in the heart is responding by connecting them with the door that will allow them to go back to the spiritual kingdom. So we may wonder, so many yoga processes, so many different systems, and whether we're looking at Hatha Yoga, the Kriya, the Integral, the Astanga, we see that most of these and all of the basic, most of the Vedic teachings, the people are attracted to impersonalism. Or they're attracted to, the deva worship, demigod worship. That's kind of normal for most people's state of unfoldment, the level of evolution that they have come to. This is sort of normal for them. So we're the ones who are doing something that is quite exceptional or quite special. So in some ways, The devotees are like the spiritual specialist. Says you have doctors, you know, you have general practitioner. So the general practitioner is dabbling and doing a little bit of all kind of things. But they're not so expert as a specialist in very focused areas. So sometimes people see us as almost sectarian. Of course, there are times when we may misrepresent our theology and act in a sectarian way. But we're not really sectarian. When we're proper, we're chaste and we're focused. So the devotee is always engaged in hearing and chanting about Krishna. Because when you're really satisfied and you're really absorbed and in love, then naturally you're just always thinking about that person or persons and always wanting to hear about them. And that's a sign that you are highly excited and highly absorbed, as we were saying yesterday, highly possessed with certain consciousness, highly tuned in particular relationship. Because as you are so much absorbed in that, you're just thinking and speaking in relationship to the object of your love. And you're just so excited and anticipating, the next encounter. And you're so delighted to be able to share what you're experiencing or what you have experienced with others. And that is the nature of the Krishna Bhakta. Matita makata para voyantis cha parasparam katayantis cha manicha tushanti cha romanti cha. So the devotee, Krishna, 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 hey. The devotee is intoxicated like that. We said one way of analyzing this class is that this is to die to live, or how to live authentically, fully, most wholesome way, by being able to not be distracted by those things that's trying to take away from our full life. How to really minimize and categorize things that are secondary and not to let them be overly distracting to us. We said we can call this class Divya Mada, how to possess divine madness. Because we're looking at what life ultimately is about. Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam 1.9.43, he says how human life is meant to die like Grandfather Bhishma. In other words, if we really summarize and epitomize and capitalize the whole of the human experience, it's really about how to prepare to die in the highest and most glorious way. So really, all the professions people have, all the relationships, all the aspirations, all the things we acquire and things we try to become, you go on and on and on. All of this is really how to prepare to die so that death becomes the most glorious experience. That it becomes the last experience in the material body, the material world. That death becomes the highest graduation. So we read and we hear, daily, really, that we're not these bodies. And we hear daily, this is not our home. We hear daily that we can leave at any moment, any day, any time. So in the course, We're trying to look at this even in a more applied sense. That every day in the course, we're going to do something in relationship, you know, to dying. We're going to die. But come back with a second, third, and fourth chance. And that we're discussing that each day, where we are, it should be an experience where we're really trying to gain full life by dying. That we're thinking, if I have to leave this afternoon or tonight, it's okay. That means whatever plans that we have, whatever's going on in our life, that's all right. But if that's become our priority, then it's not all right. That it means that we're not going to be victorious, or there's a chance we won't be, because there's other things that's so prominent and dominant in our life. Even in our relationships, if we're attached to our husband, son, daughter, children, grandfather, grandmother, whoever it is, more than to Krishna, then we have a problem. We're not giving them the best of what we can, because we're not bringing a great spiritual ourselves into that relationship. See, there are times when we can become very sentimentally involved with someone, emotionally or physically, and feel comfortable with that, only at that level. Because it may be even what they request. But if we really care about them, then if our relationship is not focused around spiritual association, then we are doing a great disservice and a great harm. We've been committing violence to those persons that we are supposed to be facilitating, or to those persons who we are supposedly giving our love and affection to. So that means to die like Grandfather Bhishma, where this tremendous war had taken place and tremendous issues amongst the family, the greatest environment of confusion, a battlefield, family conflicts can be the most intense. So with all of that was going on, for the body also to be in a difficult situation. For Bhishma Dev, in spite of all of that, to speak such high knowledge to Yudhisthira, to be so unaffected by whatever had happened, and to be so absorbed, this meditating on Krishna, not even thinking about his own devastating situation, but just being so absorbed, literally being possessed, to the point that everything else didn't even make a huge difference, other than fulfilling Krishna's desire of speaking to Yudhisthira, and just being so enraptured with the darshan of Krishna, and Krishna being so overwhelmingly giving himself in full. And so we are literally being trained as Vaishnavas how to get ready for that big test. So each day there should be things that's facilitating our victory. This is, you had your courses. And so each day you're learning something. Your Bhakti Shastra, Bhakti Vaibhava course. But it's all adding up to also being able to pass the test, being able to graduate, being able to get certified. So each discussion, each lesson, each presentation, you know, by the teacher, was all part of the puzzle that at some point was to be completed and evaluated. So we're dealing with each other. We're dealing with our families. We're organizing our life, short and long-term goals. They should be an integral expression of guaranteeing our victory at the time of death. So we're not to be morbid at all. No, it's the opposite. We're talking about eternal life. But we do realize people are in tremendous illusion because they're not properly preparing for the test. Sometimes, you know, in a class, you got some students who are, you know, kind of goofing off, or they're not studying, they're not taking the proper assignments and doing them. But they're an illusion. Because then when the evaluations go on in the tests, they're in trouble. But that at that time it's too late. They had so much opportunity, but they didn't take advantage of it. So this is pretty much what goes on day to day. So much opportunity, but some rare souls take advantage of it. But most unfortunate in one sense, that even those souls who take advantage of it, it's usually after many, many, many lifetimes of not getting it. Hopefully none of us have had the experience of failing in a course. And so now you have to repeat it. And you feel so horrible realizing that it didn't have to happen like that. But now you've kind of dug your own grave. You put yourself in that situation. So lifetime after lifetime, as we have, people have to go before Yamaraj, take another body, another existence with all its struggles. But it doesn't have to be like that. But it's so hard to think and act differently if we're not having quality association. Because the material world is particularly designed to distract everybody. And so one who's trying to be normal will be distracted. It has to be clear that we are not trying to just be normal people trying to be successful in ordinary material concerns. Now the other extreme, we're also not trying to be in denial of basic things for maintaining body and soul together. Because if we're in denial of certain essential concerns, then we will in another way get preoccupied with the bodily demands by not dealing with the basic physical and social things nicely, so we don't have to worry about them. Devotees need shelter. Devotees need economic, financial accommodations and facilities, so we don't have to worry about it. And according to our needs, we may need a certain level of material things. And the better that they are established in our life, then the less we have to worry about it. Like the karmis, they want all of these things just to have. They want more and more. But we want so that we don't have to put so much energy and time into such, so we can put more time into that which is really allowing us to, you know, to really live by being able to die to the illusion. So, any other question? Wait till the microphone comes.
Guru Maharaj, if I remember correctly, you mentioned something yesterday about not lamenting the departure of the Vaishnavas. And I was wondering, in what way does a devotee grieve for the loss of a loved one? And particularly what I'm thinking about is in
according to what you were speaking about yesterday, the departure of the spiritual master or family member or a close friend like that, a devotee.
I didn't mention not to grieve. Mm-hmm. Now, devotees should feel when a Vaishnava leaves, even though we know that Vaishnava never dies, the soul, you know, is sanatana, the soul is eternal. But there is to be such affection and appreciation that we should feel the absence, and knowing that we're not for a while going to be able to have that person's association in a certain way. Or we can have a great sadness, or we have a great happiness. They have gone and graduated, and we're still here struggling. So there can be a combination of, you know, of different types of emotions, and they're genuine. We shouldn't. I mean, I've seen recently, as devotees are passing, sometimes there's some devotees who are suppressing, you know, their grief. And I don't have time to deal with that. That's a whole other course that I give sometimes also on grief. Because it's a tremendous physical, psychological, and spiritual undertaking of what we go through, different stages. And as it is gone through healthily, then one comes out of it a much better person. If we had time our last day, we can address some things in relationship, you know, to that. But there are times when we are thinking that because we are Vaishnavas, we're not to show emotions or to have, or to experience grief. And sometimes people try to kind of write it off too quickly. But what happens is that it becomes suppressed, and that anxiety and grief and loss comes out sometimes in unhealthy ways.
Yes. Hare Krishna. Yesterday we spoke about Chiranjivas, and one example was with Vibhishan. Actually, what kind of boon did Vibhishan got? I don't know the story, just briefly. Thank you.
Yesterday we read very briefly how Lord Ramachandra had given him a boon. I see the passage, if I can find it for us. I need someone also who can read something in a minute. We're reading from Bhagavatam 1. You can research it. Bhagavatam 1, 12, 18 and 19. Well, 19 is the main one. 1:12:19. Vibhishan was one of the brothers of Ravana, a demon, but Lord Ram made him immortal by his blessings. So you can research those blessings. One really nice story of Chiranjivas. We talked yesterday about different personalities who never die. And we had this interesting list here. Some of the personalities: Narada, Markandeya, Vyas, Hanuman, Dhruva, Ashvatam, Narayan, and Rishi, Brahma, Bali, Kripa, Parasuram, and Vibhushana. And we had an assignment to reflect on some special pastimes of great devotees, how they left this world. But before we go into those discussions, I wanted to... One we didn't write up there, let me see, was Janavi. I'll just add her name to it. This one's a little less known, so I thought we could also read it very briefly. This is a short story of Janavi Thakurini, of how she herself brought a young child back to life. Who has the microphone? Oh, this is the...
Oops. Thank you.
Yeah, these are the ones. Yeah, no, it's okay. These are the ones. Oh, these are the ones that never die. Okay, it's a different list.
Is it back to life?
This is back to life case.
Yeah, we already wrote it down
on the next page. Okay, yeah, this list. Maybe her name is there already then. Do we have Janavi? Yeah. But let's just, I think we can just turn this over. Oh, yes, we did. Dhyana Vyan Samarcha. Okay, so let's read this. Mother City, you want to read this? Mother City, raise your hand. Show the section on Janabita Kaur. No, Mother City? Yes, read this for us. It's a section on, short section on Janabita Kaur.
The extraordinary kindness of Janava Thakur, Thakurini. Once while Janava Mata, the wife of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and her followers were visiting various holy places on the outskirts of Braj, they entered a village on the bank of the Yamuna. In that village lived a simple-minded Brahmana who had obtained a son in his very old age. Unfortunately, the boy had died in early childhood, and his parents were lamenting bitterly. Janava Ishwari could not tolerate their continuous crying, and her heart softened in kindness towards them. She wanted to touch the dead child, but the Brahmana's wife forbade her. Janava told the mother that since they were Brajvasis, touching the child would purify her.
Even in this case, the Brahmana's wife didn't want her to touch the dead child to become contaminated. But Janavi is saying, you're Vrajavasis, touching the child will be auspicious.
Even though it was dead. When Janava caressed the head of the dead child with her hand, he at once regained his life and looked around him. The child bowed at the feet of Sri Ishwari and then stood up. The parents of the child and the other villagers were all astonished by the miracle, and they bowed at the feet of Janava Ishwari, thanking her in various ways. Janava assured them that she had nothing to do with the miracle, but that Krishna himself had restored the boy's life because of the grief of the parents. Sri Janava displayed this same type of kindness at various times and places, and then she and her followers returned to Vrindavan.
So here we see several themes, Pada Dukkha Dukkhi Kripam Bhuti. See how Mother Janavi was so concerned about everyone, and she was feeling the great pain that this family was experiencing, and she was eager to try to assist. She's also telling us about the power of Vrijavasi, genuine Vrijavasi, that even though the baby was dead, the child was dead, Janavi didn't see touching this child seem to be a source of contamination. And we see also how the special servants of the Lord have unusual powers that's associated with their mercy and their love and concern for all. And so Janavi just touched this child's head and brought the child back to life. Let us go to our list here and go very briefly, go quite sort of quickly with some of these examples. So we have the cowherd boys. So here we have all of these examples where there was death, but there was rejuvenation, resuscitation, entity was brought back to life. We'll look at what are some of the themes in these past times. They happened, but it's something important about it. So we want to reflect on what is the theme here? What is the significance? Some things that come to us that's very significant about this particular pastime. The cowherd boys. What is some particular significance about this particular pastime? Okay. Hand the mic. Okay. Some things that we can reflect on for our own benefit in trying to prepare our minds and our consciousness more in the mood of taking these material bodies, material world, less as a priority, and being able to understand more how the residents of Vrindavan think, being able to look closer at some of the things that they experience and they do when they come into these worlds, because they're coming to the prison house mainly to help to reclaim souls and to plant seeds so others can be able to come back. So everything they do has some significance, and very dynamic pastimes have some very important significance and themes for us to be able to grasp.
With this particular pastime, I always remember, I think, how the residents in Vrindavan, the young gopas, were completely fearless because they were with Lord Krishna. They didn't have any fear at all. As opposed to those residents in different places like Dwarka, who would take up arms and go to fight with Krishna, they just relied fully on Krishna's mercy. And in this case, they just walked to death, but they had no fear at all of anything.
Okay, again, intensity of these special servants of Krishna being so totally dependent on the Lord, having no bhaya, no fear at all. We're looking at the kind of consciousness of full absorption. Some display of that was here in this pastime, where they were just so dependent. Because they were so dependent on the Lord, then it was now Krishna's duty to reciprocate in such a way. It's, there are many things in each of these stories, but we're just going to glance at a few that come to yourselves. The Pandavas. What's some important areas for us to appreciate from this particular pastime? Okay, can someone share more light on this one? Who offered this yesterday about the Pandavas? Okay. Short summary of the death experience. This will help others to think a little more about the theme.
What happened was that they were going to the lake and they were very thirsty. They needed to drink, and so a divine echo came from and asked them a question, and they didn't answer the question, so that they passed. And it went on and on from one to the other. And finally, when Yudhisthira came, that same question was asked, and he answered all the questions that, and he restored his brothers all back to life.
Okay, so why don't you help us? What are some important things that we can grasp from this story?
That Yudhisthira was, he was always truthful, and that he would always be, he would answer, just that he reflected on what was being asked, and that he didn't just go and do what everyone else was doing. He just kind of.
And we see with that potency, there was results. For instance, we are definitely to have Shraddha, so essential in our devotional life. But if our faith is only faith and it doesn't produce, if it doesn't create, it doesn't bring some powerful results, then the little faith we have will get weaker than stronger. So in Yudhisthira's case, he had potency. And with that potency, in this, he was able to be responsible for reviving his brothers back. He, did not become devastated for that potency. So look, we can see in this case the power of virtue, the power of spiritual potency, and how it goes beyond just one's own realm of existence, that it influences the environment. It influences those who we are karmically connected with. Directly or indirectly. Ajamil? The microphone.
One thing I remember about the pastime of Ajamil, one thing that struck me was the significance of training, especially in the younger years, because of that training he had the memory of that name, and to name his son Narayan, even though he was engage in all kinds of sinful activity, to even name his son that.
Okay. So, some powerful carryover from previous activities, so many things. You want to address the same one or a different one? Oh, okay. What we do in early parts of our life, you know, spiritually and psychologically, and biologically, has so much to do with what happens in our later life, or has so much to do with what happens at the time of death. So much so that even in the womb, so much of the child's personality is formed in the womb by what the mother is doing, by what's happening in the environment, the kind of sounds, the kind of thoughts. So actually, by the time most children come out, they're already at a loss. They're already so far behind. They already have internalized a consciousness of violence, consciousness of abandonment. And that gets added on to what happens in the earlier parts of their life as young children. But so often we forget that it starts even before, impregnation. That's why the samskaras are so important. Then while the child is in the womb, and then after. So in Ajamil's case, some early experiences came forth to be able to give him some great blessing and boon.
In fact, I'm just having a course on that this morning. We were speaking about that. Is that we see was very much trained in the Vedic culture, but just by one sight, how lust is so powerful, he fell down at that. So that we can see the power of lust over being trained so nicely. And then he became so sinful, but just by one utterance of the names of Narayan, he became saved. So we can see that the power of the holy name also. The power of lust and the power of holy name. How it kills lust.
And it's kind of interesting because it's the event, but the event is connected with a series of events. In other words, Ajamil being overwhelmed by that sight, that perception, was really not just that immediate view, but it's an aggregate of consciousness that then becomes explosive by something happening. It's like in the case, was it of Sobari Muni, when he became overwhelmed by seeing two fish engaged in copulation. So yes, that immediate view or vision, perception, caused the fall down, but not really. That was the catalyst, but it was due to his offense of Garuda. And then that weakened his spiritual immune system. Then that event that took place happened. You see, nobody really just falls down by one particular occurrence. Not really. Although it may seem that way. If that really happened, then Krishna would be unfair. Someone is with so much devotion and so much austerity, and then one situation comes about and that person becomes overwhelmed. It's that there are other things going on that cause that individual to not have protection when certain things come forth. So it is a manifestation of other things that have gone into the creation that allows that to happen and to manifest in such a way. We look careful about that, because otherwise it can seem like somebody can go years and years and years or be very dedicated, and then one day he's happened to see something happen, and all of a sudden they just lose all of their devotion. And the mentality goes completely, in chaos, in disarray. No, it's an accumulation. It's rare that someone says, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, I'm going to go into Maya. Not really. And even if someone says that, it's an accumulation of doubts and sometimes offenses and apparats, and the person is looking for some situation to take some unfortunate shelter of. But usually it's more subtle. It's that we rationalize things that are dangerous. We bring them too close to us. We associate too whimsically. And before long, Maya just becomes more and more prominent in our life and in our consciousness. Someone says, well, you know, it wasn't my fault, it was Maya's fault. Or the Christian saying, it wasn't my fault, and it was a devil. Somehow the devil just overtook me. Or Mara overtook me. In the Buddhist system, no. It's that we had some desires that were improper. As Krishna's responding to the aggregate of our desires, that means we definitely were wanting to do the right thing, but our desires to experience something of a deviation were stronger than our desires for doing the right thing. And because those desires for deviation were stronger, then Krishna allows Maya to present something that lets us focus and absorb ourselves or attach ourselves to something that's unhealthy. And then we have the experience of fall down in that way. Srisi Saranga, the course. Remember his spiritual master had asked him, was it not Lord Chaitanya, had asked him to take disciples. And he wasn't so eager. He was thinking, for disciples, well, what is the need? He did not feel that he was qualified. He felt that disciples also can bring some unhealthy impositions in the mind, honor, distinction, worship. But Lord Chaitanya requested him that he would do to assist him in what he's doing. And so the first person that he saw that next day, he was going to give initiation to. I remember a dead corpse was coming down the river. What's some important themes here in this story? Okay, go Krishna.
The potency of the guru. Was he actually directly from Lord Chaitanya? I thought it was his spiritual master, Abhiram Thakur. I don't know.
Does anyone recall? I think it was. Yes, Lord Chaitanya himself. Yeah. We see it in two ways. This is very good. He got an instruction from his guru, from Lord Chaitanya himself. He took it very serious. He was very humble. And he was thinking there's no need to have disciples. Lord Chaitanya was disturbed that he was having to do everything himself. And so Mahaprabhu wanted him to have assistance so that he could even do more and do better what he was doing, but not have to be caught up in so many things that helpers could be able to assist him on. And so he followed that, in spite of the fact that he wasn't so eager, you know, to do such. Wasn't thinking that way. But he accepted that instruction. And by honoring that instruction and making that his life and soul, then when he touched this corpse, he then had such transcendental electric current within him, spiritual potency, that he was able to mitta sanjeevana, bring that living entity and soul, you know, back into the same body. And remember the story is that the young boy had just taken Brahman and had gotten bitten by a snake and had died. And so when he was brought back to life, his family found out about it. They, of course, rushed down to reclaim their son. And the son was, it's like in the case of Tritiketu or Srivastava's son, he was so animated with knowledge and philosophical understanding, he was not at all ready to go back into the environment with his family, but more concerned with his eternal existence and eager to serve, just stay in the care of Sri Sarangadev and to assist him. Sandipani Muni sons, what is it? Something we can learn from this particular pastime? Anyone? Okay, we can go Kalani.
Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are known as Bhakata Vatsala, that they are very kind and merciful to their devotees. So, of course, the role there, Sandipani Muni was Krishna's guru, but still he was actually Krishna's devotee playing the role. And so I see that as Krishna's kindness, that he was wanting to relieve him of his distress, and he was to also demonstrate through that lila that he protects, paritanai sadunam. He always protects all of the pious souls that have surrendered to him. So,
let's move on a little quicker. Stoa here, Pritchett. Pastime of death. Pritchett died. How do we put this up here? What's the pastime? What's here? Okay.
Pritchett Maharaj is burnt in the womb by the Brahmastra of Asvatthama, but Lord Vishnu was there to protect him and pretty much just rejuvenated his body from the condition of being destroyed.
Yeah, in a few sentences, what's important theme there?
Krishna, Pritchett Maharaj is called Vishnu. Vishnu Rata. He's protected by Lord Vishnu. It shows that Krishna is willing to protect his devotees, even in such severe cases.
Okay, so this is an example. When Krishna wants to destroy someone, no one can protect. And when he's there to protect, even when they're seemingly destroying, Krishna can revive and will protect. Haridas Thakur?
My favorite part about that pastime is... when after Haridas Thakur regained his life, he engaged in the pastime with Nityananda, saving Jagai and Madai. And my favorite part of that pastime is when he says to Lord Nityananda that I was saved from leaving my body by the mercy of Mahaprabhu, but now I'll have to leave my body because of your foolish activities of trying to preach to these of Jagai and Madai. So I don't know if that's relevant, but that's my favorite part.
Everything is relevant here. It's our personal voice also, what we get from some of these. In the case of Devaki's sons, what's important for us there? Swami recalls this lila. These were actually demons. Let me read something here. Devaki heard of Krishna bringing back the sons of Sandipani Munis. And so first we see that Krishna and Balaram, that they went to Bali Maharaj's planet looking for them. Now these were six demigods, not demons, demigods. Six demigods who had been, they had been condemned because they offended Lord Brahma. And so we see how many things happened at the same time. So they had offended Lord Brahma and they were cursed. They were condemned to take birth as sons of Hiranyakasipu first. They were put in the womb of Devaki and then they were killed. But after they were killed, then they would be able to return to their posts as devas, as demigods. So let's look at these last two here. What is this one? Brahma's sons, and I can't see from my angle. Oh, we mentioned this already. Brahma's sons, anyone to share on this one? Brahma's son.
Brahmanas.
Okay. This is not Brahma. The Brahmana's sons. When King Ugrasena was approached by the Brahmana, remember this past time? That time after time, his wife brought forth a child. Then the child died. And so here, he went to King Ugrasena, very disturbed, and directly chastised King Ugrasena that this cannot happen in a kingdom where the rulership is proper. And so therefore he was directly assaulting King Agrasena. Something is not right in your kingdom. Well, maybe I'll share this one. One of the themes here is just how involved the effects of the leader is or was on the Praja. That proper leadership was so significant that when a kingdom was properly managed, it would bring such specific well-being to each citizen, even to the point that it could have such an effect on the quality of procreation. So here this Brahmana was thinking and feeling quite justified that this has happened. This is very unnatural. And so for something such grave to happen, great thing to happen like this, that must be in connection with some improprieties that's going on in leadership. So it's definitely an address of how every major problem indirectly has something to do with a crisis in leadership. And where there is success, it has something always indirectly to do with the quality of leadership. Okay, so we'll want to move to our next activities. So we looked at the Chiranjeevanas in some cases, Mritta Sanjeevani, certain particular pastimes where there was death and someone was brought back to life. Some things that we can learn, reflect on from these particular encounters. Yes.
Sorry, I'm a little late. I'm a little slow. But I would like to add a little point about the sons of Brahma. Actually, their offense were that they were laughing at Lord Brahma. And there's in Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's an explanation of this, that one should never laugh when at a great personality.
Okay, this is the case where they were cursed by him. So another important theme there shows the danger of offenses. And laughing at great personalities. You may take things in a light way, but when someone is very specially empowered, to the degree that they are empowered, is to the degree that they are able to give blessings when we associate with them properly, but is also to the degree that there can be the gravity of offense based on the level of purity. The more pure someone is, the more serious the offense is when offense is made. The more pure someone is, the more blessings there is, benediction in associating with them in the proper way. Now we go to our homework assignments. So our homework assignment that we ask each of you, again, I'm apologizing each day because it's a real strain on me trying to speak. I have tremendously inflamed, infected lungs. The homework assignment is that we were to consider that, hypothetically, we have left our bodies and we are visiting our own ceremony, funeral, passing samskara, where different devotees are reflecting on what we meant to them, what we offer to community. We wanted you to write down and to reflect on what are some of the things that you specifically would feel proud, feel happy, feel encouraged to hear different devotees say or speak in relationship to your existence. Now you're gone, but you're being able to listen in. And you're listening to what people are saying. Of course, you also have the power to hear what they're thinking also. But we're just going to address what they are saying. What you would feel comfortable, feel good about as a Vaishnava, a Vaishnavi, in hearing the discussions. So we're looking at this, realizing that each of us will have this encounter. That each of us will have a time when the various devotees in our communities that we're associated with will have to reflect on us, of what we meant to them, what they're going to lose by not being able to associate with us in this form, physical form. And they will evaluate individually and collectively what our existence meant to the project, to the community, to the Sangha that we were mainly associating in. We're looking at this, just look a little closer at what are some possibilities. Because most important, as we do think about the things we like people or would like people to say about us, how far are we from that as a reality? But that's the second part. Who would like to start off first? Okay. Hand the mic to her.
Maharaj, what I am going to read is not what I am. It's something that I wish to be in one life. She was...
No, we want to think and understand your humility. But it is possible for every one of us in this lifetime, we leave this body, go back to the spiritual world, it's possible for us to have the most amazing impact on the devotees that we associate with. So we want you in your own way, considering what you would be very, very pleased, extremely pleased in hearing. And we're not trying to be humble here now. We're just trying to be as real as possible of what we would want to hear.
She was always ready to serve the devotees, Guru and Krishna. She was always sharing Krishna Katha. It was very nice to see that she always loved and respected...
Okay, now instead of saying she or he, I want you to put your own name there. It's a special entity that has just left.
Archana was always ready to serve devotees, Guru and Krishna. Archana was always sharing Krishna Katha. Archana was also very, very nice to see and to be developed, to make the people that they grow in Krishna consciousness.
Sadhu ki. Okay, next. This is mainly for you, but we want you to read it out to us so you can even reflect on it even more. Okay? This is personally for you. Okay, next, go, Nanda.
Okay, well, there's positive and less positive. Right. So, Gokulananda, he was sort of a good fellow. He always tried to do good to others. Although Gokulananda could often be sentimental and flaky, he could always count on his good heart to help in some way. There were a few contradictions in his character, however. Gokulananda's eager spiritual aspirations could easily become distracted by his strong sensuality and mundane affinities. He liked strong feelings, especially interpersonal sharing. We hope and pray that next birth will be again in Lord Chaitanya's service to continue his better desires of serving the Vaishnavas.
Sadhu, sadhu. Arivo. Next.
Despite having many obstacles, Asesha certainly was a steady and committed devotee of beloved Srila Prabhupada's family. She applied herself to honouring safe and confidential space to others with integrity and equanimity. Devotees and non-devotees alike felt loved and cared for by her.
Next. And we do this kind of exercise, you know, the future is really just an extension of the present. We are making our futures every moment. by what we think, say, things that we do. And so we can have tremendous influence in what our futures are, based on the quality of our, you know, our present thoughts and focus. If we think small, we speak small, we get small results. If we have a big vision, focus on that, we're keeping the goal in mind of this wonderful spiritual environment that's our home, that we can eternally associate in. We keep in mind and smart of the wonderful devotees to the Nitya Siddhas, how they do what they do, the way they do it. Then, at the time of death, all of that just comes forth. As we live each day and we die daily, and people will even be saying now, how are we having such an impact on their lives? It's like if we ask each of you, and I want you to think about this for a minute. I want you to think of the most trustworthy person that you know. Just reflect on that. Most trustworthy person that you know. Hopefully we all can think of someone. But now I wonder, how many people, when they think of the most trustworthy person that they know, will think of you as that most trustworthy person? As Vaishnavas, we really want to be the servant of another in a profound way. We have so many cases of devotees who have left the movement, who have fallen away, even sometimes in very, very big positions. And they were struggling, they were suffering, they were in a conflictual situation. And there wasn't one person in the Vaishnava Sangha who they're ready to really reveal their mind to. Wasn't one person in the Vaishnava Sangha who they felt they could just really pour out what was going on. And then in some cases we didn't find out until after they just left. So admit that somehow, as a community, we weren't able to send a signal to that person sufficiently that we love you, we care about you, and we want to be there to help you. We want to be able to celebrate your victories. We want to assist where you're wounded or weak, or where you're in some type of need. We want to do our part. If we can't do anything, we want to be there to cry with you, to pray with you. And so in many cases, we may find that we don't have somebody who we have that relationship with. But we can have that relationship with others when we can become that ourselves. The more that we can become that for somebody else, the more guarantees that there will be Vaishnavas available to be able to facilitate, to assist, to help, and also to protect. And so when we have been so much like that, when we have our day-to-day experiences, people are so appreciative of our association, and when we leave, we've left a tremendous impact on others' lives. Because as you were saying, both the mothers were saying also, how they would like to be known as one who made this kind of difference. They would like to be known. None of us would like to leave the body and for devotees to say, well, you know, I don't know how that person ever became a devotee. Or we leave the body and others say, I'm really sorry to see her go, but I think another lifetime will be better for her, give her a better chance. She was always in problems. Constantly doubting, constantly making all types of offenses. None of us would be happy to hear that. People to think, or to even say almost nothing, that our life meant so little that when we left, that practically most devotees didn't even notice it. One of the devotees, one of the sannyasis, when Sridhar Maharaj came the other day, it was so wonderful. Holy Dham, so many devotees, and some of the disciples also, could just be there and to send their love and to give their love and to pray and to just be there with them. And one of the sannyasis mentioned that our movement will really be awesome when we can do this for the most insignificant bhakta. I had an experience a couple of years ago. I had an operation. And so I wasn't able to come for the festival. I had it just around this time. And there were so many leaders who were writing me and praying. And there was just massive devotees around the world who were praying at the time of the operation. And one godbrother, you know, who's in another month, sent a letter to me. It was a private letter. But he said, yes. So for you guys, to the big leaders, everybody prays. He said, but how many hundreds of devotees have been extremely sick or have had all kinds of operations? And no one hardly even knew about it. And so when he said that, it was very profound. And it really stuck with me. It helped me to realize how much we all have to be more concerned about what each devotee is experiencing. How much we have to see every devotee as important. And that kind of helped me with a meditation that I had gotten into around that time. I was praying more to Prabhupada, as I do every day. And it was a special prayer. Different from my prayer about this is my last day of my life. But I've been, especially the last 2.5 years, praying to Prabhupada to help me as I move around and travel so much, especially these 2 years, to help me to help minimize some of the suffering that Vaishnavas and our own society are experiencing. And so, because as we are having more facility to cope with our own battle of Kurukshetra's challenges and sufferings, it allows each of us to then to move faster toward the goal. Too much suffering causes us to doubt the process, causes us to become fearful for going deeper because we feel uncertain. We're not sure what the outcome will be. Maybe more heavier challenges. Too much suffering causes us not to be able to reach out for each other and to touch each other in a very deep place in our consciousness. Too much suffering causes us to minimize the love we can give to our husbands and our wives, the love and the security and the support we can give to our children. Because if we're too wounded, we can't heal the world if we're so wounded ourselves. We can't really help create or give ourselves to someone in a deeper way if we're too shut down by our particular wounds. And we're wounded, then it means the whole Sangha of Vaishnavas, it gets weakened, because then we're too captured, too much absorbed in trying to deal with the immediate pains that we're experiencing. Or we become too much self-centered based on our own pain, and we miss the chance to have synergy, to have more ability, to have unity and diversity, to complement each other. And when we get too wounded, we get sometimes too distracted from being able to create more of a barrier that keeps the general Maya out of our institutions. So let's hear a few more. We've left the body, we're looking back in retrospect, hearing what some of the devotees are saying about us.
I have a long list. Damodar was a good example of dedication to ISKCON and Srila Prabhupada. He was a very caring person. He was selfless. I never heard Damodar say anything wrong about others. I always heard him glorify other Vaishnavas. No, I'm not. I mean,
no, good. This is, you should have high goals.
Yeah.
Don't. No.
This is what they exercise. This is what we want them to
what
say.
We want.
It's
yes.
Not. It's not what they're gonna say.
Yes. Okay. So we would feel very excited, happy, fully ready to identify with what they could possibly say. Okay, go ahead now.
Damodar was always ready to help. He was a very good manager. He left something for us to continue. He was very humble and respectful, a perfect gentleman, and he was very sincere.
Jai Hari Bol, Sadhu. Okay, let's take a few more. Our time is going quick. So we have left the body, and now we are reflecting on some of the things we would be very happy hearing people say about us, as we have made this awesome transition.
I've been volunteered here.
Oh, Matsya has left. And the body is there. But that soul is hearing now. What things?
I'm hoping that I left in Vrindavan and that devotees are saying, well, he's so fortunate. You know, he left in Vrindavan. You know, he might have been a rascal, but he definitely went back to Godhead. And I'm hoping they'll say that, you know, he translated so many wonderful books and did such a wonderful service for the Vaishnavas and making some for the literature available. And he was always very devoted to Radha and Shama Sunda and did kirtan for them. These kind of things I'd like to hear.
Okay, a few more. Now, as you share with us some of the things you would be happy fulfilled in hearing people say about you after you had left, or what you meant to them, what you meant to community, what you meant to Vaishnava Sangha, you should also be looking realistically at what is needed for you to do for that to be a reality. What areas that you need to focus on now in your life so that when you do leave, that these are not only the things that people will say, but say even better, even more than what you, you know, would like to have said or like to have heard. I mean, there are times when we feel good about certain things that we would like others to compliment us on. But there's also the experience where we can have impact on people far beyond what we even know. When there is an awesome potency, then we're like puppets. And Krishna uses us even far beyond our own intellectual or mental, rational realization and understanding. Because as someone is in need, and as we are eager to serve Krishna in our heart, we'll connect with Krishna in that person's heart, and will get us to do the right thing or do something in a certain time, a certain way, so that it will be able to connect in a very profound way with someone else. That means that we have such a deep caring spirit, a deep service mood, that Krishna will facilitate us in being able to serve. And people will have such and be impacted on it by our presence in such a way, even far beyond what we were even aware of how we were influencing them. Next person.
Mohan was a very warm-hearted person, and all what he wants to do in his life is to please Gurudev and Srila Prabhupada. And most of everything, he liked to do sankirtan and preaching to new people.
I mean, just imagine if we had the power to decide what people would think about us or how they would feel about us after we have left this world. We do. what we do each day is preparing for what our own outcome will be and how we relate to devotees every day is determining how we're impacting upon them. And our own individual evaluation of how much we are genuinely, authentically able to go back to the spiritual world is in concomitant with how much we become like the residents of the spiritual world. And becoming like the residents of the spiritual world is not a matter of conceptualization. It's a matter of application. That our environments, our associations in our projects is our training grounds. The families we have, the communities we're in, these are our training grounds. These are our tests. If you pass so many tests, you naturally get the graduation. If you fail so many tests, you naturally repeat the course. We talk about dying daily. We're talking about each day is another test. Each day is another trial, another battle, etc., for a chance to be victorious, a chance to aggregate that kind of consciousness that when the Maha test comes, there's no problem. We have the final test. Usually, it is not hard if we have passed nicely the primary test. We mentioned how Krishna consciousness gets more difficult as we go on each year, but not harder if we have good foundation and we are passing tests regularly. Then as things become more difficult, we also have the facility to still be successful even though they're more difficult. But where we have not been sufficiently honest, where we have too many weeds that are also growing, or anarthas that are prominent, then as we go on and on each year in our devotional service, in our devotional career, in our devotional life, then we get to the plateaus where it seems almost impossible, and sometimes impossible for us to be able to accelerate, because we have not aggregate sufficient potency to be able now to go to the next level. There's so many times when someone has had a huge fall, and that fall was really Krishna arranging for them to grow now like leaps and bounds. And I've seen this especially among some of the leaps who've fallen, is that their big fall was Krishna arranging to give them most grandest blessings. Now become real sadhu. Now become really prepared for Vrindavan consciousness. Or do you want demigod consciousness? And so as we are chanting, engaged in all kinds of projects, Sravanam, Kirtan, Vishnu, doing all of these things, credits build up. And as credits build up, then at some point, Krishna says, oh, so much credits you have. Now this can allow you for such. Is this what you really want? And in some cases, we don't want Krishna in full. Just like devas, there are many different types of devas, but many demigods, they know Krishna. They engage in the yajnas. They engage in the austerities. They engage in the pujas, but they do not fully want Krishna. They want also or as much their own sovereignty. And so they cannot enter Vrindavan. They cannot reside in Vrindavan. And so there are many members in our society. Prabhupada himself said that most of his disciples want to go to the heavenly planets, emphasizing equality. The quality of bhakti is of such that it's not right to the point of being ready to have Divya Mata be a total slave of Krishna, to receive all of Krishna's love. And so as we go on in our devotion, as we are able to literally to die daily, then we don't let some unhealthy patterns kind of remain underlining and just go on year after year after year. The Krishna puts us in a point at a phase where we have to deal with it. If we don't deal with it, like any test, if you don't pass the Maha test, or if you don't pass a great test, then you repeat. Or sometimes you get a demotion as others go on. But that student who is conscious that each day is really the test, then when the written test comes, or the teacher says, close the books, now, bring out your pens, here are the questions for the examination. Someone who hasn't been studying, hasn't been proper on a day-to-day basis, just freaks out. Oh, I didn't know that was going to be today. I was going to study next week. Oh, what can I do? Sometimes the students play sick. They get real sick and have to leave. Think of some way how they can just get out of the class. Some of us have done these kind of things. But when it comes to Krishna, there's no cheating. But if we are daily dying, if daily we're realizing, hey, today can be my last day. Today determines what I do today. It determines what is going to be the impact I have on others or when I leave this world. It's going to determine who is going to be waiting for me, what I'm going to become when I leave this body. Prabhupada saying in Bhagavatam 1:9 that life is about dying like Bhishma. That life is really just different integrals of preparation for the final test. Life is just a interval of existence preparing for the next step. And so as we arrange things, as we evaluate things, as we do things, whatever that is, we should also be mindful that I am really much more than what I'm doing at this time, in this temporary environment, that I am an eternal entity, full of the knowledge, full of bliss. And it is within my own power, with mercy, to be able to say yes to Krishna fully in this lifetime. So let's have maybe one or two more, and then we have to stop. I think it's already 6 o'clock. Where's the microphone?
Mine is very, very small. When I die, one day, I should like the devotees tell about me. She was a very happy person, always happy, never angry. She helped to everybody. She make big service for the deities, for Guru Maharaj, and for the devotees. And she was very good mother.
Okay, we'll take this last one.
Udaranga really appreciated me. By her qualities, I could understand that God is all good. She had such patience with me.
Don't say she, put your name there.
Okay. Shall I read it again? Or? Okay. Udaranga really appreciated me. By Udaranga's qualities, I could understand that God is all good. Udaranga had such patience with me. Udaranga got me chanting and devote my life to devotional service to the Lord.
Okay, let me take one more. And then tomorrow we can move much quicker to the next subject. One more person, one of the men. Okay, bring the microphone up. It's one of the men. In these kind of courses, it's always harder for the men. Men are sometimes a little more shy about sharing. But in this course, everyone has to share. All right? We're all in this to learn together from our realizations, from our experiences. And each of us impact on what the community is, a specific community, and each devotee makes up the consciousness of what constitutes ISKCON. We should never minimize the fact of thinking that things just go on. No, our society is based on what the individual consciousness, how it adds up, determines the environment. As a matter of fact, the more each devotee, one devotee, becomes more serious, the more it makes it easier for every devotee. In other words, as we engage in our devotional service, our own activities create certain aspects of the culture of devotion that we're dealing with. And so as devotees become more serious, it raises the standard. It's like a wave that we all get bombarded by. Either it pushes us forward, or it can be a wave that makes it more difficult. As devotees are engaged in more prajalpa, as devotees are having mixed devotion, as devotees are caught up in all kinds of inauspicious things, it makes it more difficult for each devotee in his or her practice of devotional service. We're all in this together much more than we normally think about, much more than we normally realize. Our thoughts have such a huge effect on each of us. Maybe tomorrow or next day I'll show some other ways how we are so connected with what we do and how it influences each particular person.
Earlier you said to ask to write questions down yesterday, and I just wondered if I didn't get a chance to ask them, if I can ask tomorrow.
Okay, yes. What we want you to do, questions you have, because we have to stop. I need to do, let me just do one. Let me have two volunteers. I think I need to do this to show you a trick before we adjourn. I need two volunteers, okay? I'll tell you what you volunteer for once you come up. Excuse me. Okay, I need two men then. Okay? What I want you to do is I tell you what, I want you to go outside actually just for a minute, okay? But put your hand in here so you won't be able to hear what I'm saying, and then I'll tell you what to come back in later. What I'm going to do is called a muscle test. It's examining energy within a person's existence. When he first comes in, we're going to all think about him. Very good thoughts. Very devotional thoughts. I want you all to think, hopefully he's not hearing, I want you all to think how he's such a wonderful, wonderful devotee. He has good service attitude. He's very fixed in his devotion. He's a nice, wonderful Guru Kuli. Okay? And then I'm going to send him out again. And then unfortunately, I want you to all think negative. Okay? What kind of devotee he is. I mean, whatever negative thoughts you can think, you know, we're going to beg forgiveness later. Or you just think, okay? And we're going to test his energy. All right? Go ahead.
First, the positive.
Okay. I'll tell you when to switch. When I say number two, then you switch to the negative. Okay, bring it. Okay. Could you hear me, what I was saying?
No.
All right. Okay, what I want you to do, I want you to stand right here. Okay. And you're going to just hold up your right arm. Okay. Just like this, you know, like this. Mm-hmm. Now, what he's going to try to do with both his hands is try to put your hand down to your waist. You're just going to try to resist. You're just going to try to pull your hand like that, as straight as you can. Okay? He's going to try to pull it down, but you're just going to try to hold it there. Okay? You're just going to just try to resist so he can't hold it down. Okay. He's going to do that for you. Okay, now, this is the number one, okay? All right?
Yes.
Number one. Okay, I want you to just close your eyes.
Okay.
All right? And just hold your hand. Everybody else, we watch. But now we're in the number one. Okay, number one.
I should do it.
So you're going to take his hand and just try like this. You're going to try hard. To pull it down. Okay. Strong heart. Okay. All right. Okay, everyone saw that. Okay. Okay, now this is number two. Okay. So you're going to do it two times, all right? I want you to close your eyes again. I want you to do the very same thing. Okay, everyone, this is number two for what assignment is. Okay? You do the very same thing. Okay. Arrivo. Okay. Now, what I want to hear from you. Now, what did you notice? The first time, was it much harder?
Oh yeah, it was a distinct difference. I can tell you. It's like, you know, second time was like...
Now, I'm going to tell you what we did. The first time, we were thinking really good thoughts about you. And without you even being aware of it, it empowered you. It gave you certain strength. Thoughts are so powerful of how we're interacting and affecting and influencing each other every single day without being obvious and aware of it. Second time, we were thinking, the first time we were thinking good thoughts. Second time, we were thinking unhealthy thoughts about you. We were thinking that something that wasn't nice. All right? I just tell people to think anything that wasn't nice, think about you. And so they were bombarding you with some negativities. And without you even knowing it, you were weakened. He could distinctly tell, and maybe you could also, if even when you were here at first, you were able to resist them a lot more. But when you started thinking negative, it's like we took energy from you. We disempowered you. And it was so much easier for him to bring your hand down. Okay, done. We beg forgiveness. I beg forgiveness, and they do. Projected negative thoughts on you in the Holy Dham. Now, I have to give an assignment, but please take some note of questions that you had, you know, for today, and then tomorrow we'll start off, you know, answering those questions. Now, this little, we call it interactive thing that we did just now should help us also in realizing not only do we have so much power in how we influence others, but we have so much power in how we influence ourselves also. And so if we are constantly sending negative thoughts to ourselves, or if we're not sufficiently thinking of higher things, then we're also disempowering ourselves constantly. We're weakening ourselves and making ourselves more susceptible to the onslaught of Maya's attempts. Or we become weakened. As we're weakened, our spiritual immune system is such, then we become more of a product to all kinds of deviations. So we can help each other, we can help ourselves so much. By man mana mava man bhakto, because just always think of me. So now, I'm going to divide you up in twos for this homework assignment. We want to look at specific pastimes of individuals passing, leaving their bodies. We want one of you, and you decide, to make a short summary of the pastime tomorrow. And we want the other partner to explain to us something about some important themes of that particular pastime. Let's go over that again. We're going to have you in twos. So we're going to give you a particular pastime that's your homework assignment, your reflection that you're going to share with us. One of you will summarize the actual pastime for us tomorrow. The other person will share what are some significant aspects, some significant lessons, some significant themes in that particular passing of that soul, the way that person passed. Keep in mind now, we're talking about Divya Mata, divine madness, dying daily, by particularly becoming more observant about the residents of Vrindavan, the pure entities who come into this world. How they lived is as important as how they left in many cases. And how they leave, tell us something and leave a special message for us. They didn't have to leave the way they did. Something special happened. Okay, so first the two of you. You're going to take the Junior Haridas story. Okay? You're going to take Sri Gopal Chakravarti. Prabhu, Haribo, right here, two of you, Gopal Chakravarti. Let's see, two of you are going to take Rupa Kaviraj. Rupa Kaviraj. So you have to do some research on that. If you need some help, come to see me. Two of you, Mahapurana, a disciple of Ramanujacharya. The two of you here, Gopal, Chanagora, you're going to take Bhishma Dev. Okay. Gokulananda, the two of you, you're going to take Haridas. Haridas the core. Okay. See, you send your thoughts up here. All right. Let's see. Any more men? Okay. Yourself and the body here. You're going to take. Let's see. So take Lord Nityananda. Okay. All right. Okay. Two mothers here. You're going to take the passing of Krishna. Okay. Here, see two of you, Lord Chaitanya. Okay. Two of you, Lakshmi Priya. Okay. This is Heidi. Okay. Now you got to take Lakshmi Priya. Okay. Okay, the two mothers here. Mr. Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Okay, two mothers here. Lord Nityananda's father, Haridas Pandit. Okay? Let's see. Glasses for me. Okay? Two mothers here. You're going to take, Bhakti Siddhanta. Okay? Yes, two of you. And, Spanish? Okay, then two of you. Okay? So the two Spanish mothers take Bhakti Siddhanta? Okay, I have three more. Let's see. The two mothers here? Okay? Take Mr. Gaur Govinda. Maharaj. Okay. And I think, Mother, you're the only one left. Okay, you're going to take Jamal Krishna Maharaj. Okay. All right. Okay, so. Did I cover everyone? How about yourself? Did I give you one? Are you in the class? Yes. I didn't give you anybody, did I? You with him? Okay. So, any questions about the homework assignment? Anyone? So, again, you're going to, and if need be, just spend 5 minutes after the class to discuss something. So, you're going to reflect on the past time. One of you is going to summarize the past time. The other person is going to share some particular significant themes about that particular past time. Question? Okay. Who did I give you? Mahapurana? Okay. So there's the book of the life of Ramanujacharya. It's an orange book. Yes. It's in Croatia also. You're familiar with it. Okay, so the two of you can connect on that. Hopefully you won't have too much trouble because, you know, you're not in your own temples where you have books. But if you anyone have any trouble, Haribo, Matsya Avatar, anyone have any trouble with their pastime? Matsya has a Veda base, so you'll see him. Just stand up, Matsya. Okay. Anyone have any trouble with their pastime? Then you should see him. But it's not that you have to be so exact about sharing the pastime. You just summarize it for us. Then the other person gives us some important themes from that particular passing. It's just that there's so many examples in the Shastra I just chose a few of these special cases that we can look at. Because all of these things that the great devotees do, and what to say, the Lord and His plenary expansions, are important for us to meditate on. Everything they do when they come into this world and the way they leave has some significance. And as we are trying to become like them, as we are trying to get the full benefit of their coming to reclaim us, as we're more mindful in these ways, we'll benefit so much more. Dying daily. All right, so save your questions for tomorrow. We'll start off with tomorrow with those questions. It's confounded. Tadasi Rupad Ki.